Well, welcome back to the Jazz Podcast. I'm Matt Sanchez. We have someone on the show that I've been a really big fan of, and I know I've had many people ask me and say, oh, I really want to know what Ronnie Brewer's up to. We have Ronnie Brewer on Jazz. I posted something on my Twitter account maybe two weeks ago, and I tagged Ronnie on it. It's just a team photo, I think, of the 09 team. You know, Ronnie liked it, and he followed me back, and it gave me the opportunity to slide into your DM, so to speak, and ask you to be on this podcast. So, thank you for taking the time.
No problem. Thank you for posting the pic. It brought up old memories, so I really appreciate that.
What are you up to? What are you up to today? What are you doing now?
Right now, I currently work at Fayetteville High School. I'm an oral communications teacher, an assistant basketball coach at the varsity and junior varsity level. Oversee the sophomore team and the ninth grade. It's kind of a separate entity. I have invested in a few things in the Arkansas area. I have a beauty, hair and beauty supply store, Hair Couture, here in Fayetteville. Invested in a little bit of real estate where I have quite a few rental properties here in Northwest Arkansas. And I have a trucking company, Brew Crew Transportation, that we specialize in the transportation of steel coils, steel beams, and potentially trying to grow that even bigger. I have six trucks right now that run on a regular basis with drivers, and looking to add on to that actually pretty soon with that. So I still run my foundation, the Ronnie Brewer Foundation, which helps at-risk youth, and run my basketball camps through that, and different mentoring programs at the Fayetteville Boys and Girls Club that I'm very passionate and very involved with. And that's about it, man. I try to stay as busy as I possibly can. I coach AAU basketball for the Arkansas Woods Elite 16 and under team, and just give me the opportunity to be able to give back to the youth and carry on the love and passion of the game that I have to these young student athletes.
That's awesome. It does sound like you're really busy. You got a lot going on.
Yeah, and actually, you caught me on our break. I'm headed to every Wednesday. We have the Power Hour show on 99.5 FM radio. It's ESPN show that I do with one of my best friends, Wallace Spearman. He's a former Olympic athlete, and Aaron Peters. He's a local personality. He was on the news, on the radio for a lot of years, and allows me to be able to do something that I'm passionate about. I went to school for broadcast journalism, so it allows me to do something with my degree and stay involved with what's going on in local sports, local and regional sports. So I really enjoy doing that. So, that and, raising my daughter keeps me as busy as possible. And I'm just enjoying life as much as I possibly can.
That's awesome. And I know as a Jazz fan, a lot of times when players come and players go, like, social media nowadays, you can kind of check out what guys are up to, but sometimes you don't know and you lose touch. So it's really cool talking to you, and I'm sure Jazz fans are going to enjoy, hearing what you have to say. I kind of wanted to start out, I know this is a really, tough subject. It's the NBA obviously is in the world, the sporting world and the world in general, horrible tragedy, nine lives were lost, including Kobe and his 13-year-old daughter. And I thought, who better to talk about Kobe than, a competitor, someone who played against him for so many years. And I kind of wanted to get your opinion on, just playing against Kobe and Kobe and what he meant to the game of basketball and just kind of to the world.
I think, when you're playing in the moment, you don't understand how big Kobe Bryant is until you take a step back and what he meant for the game of basketball, the NBA, and just basketball in itself, not just, men's basketball, the NBA basketball. It's, how he affected, women's basketball and the support he gave towards the WNBA and college athletes and high school athletes, and just the inspiration he gave to anybody who wanted to play basketball, and, creating the Mamba mentality of what it meant to play at a certain level. and to reach a certain goal of achievement, and the work that you had to put in to get there is something that, you know, when you're in the moment, you don't really realize that. But, like, you know, looking back and, you know, hearing all these different stories and seeing all these game films, like, you know, a lot of us are in the like mix of his greatness and his legacy. And, you know, for me, unfortunately, like, you know, we played during a time where, you know, he was at his prime and, you know, knocked us out of the playoffs a couple of times. And, you know, the Lakers had a phenomenal team, but I still look at it as a great opportunity to mold me as a person, to mold my competitiveness and make me strive to work harder each and every day because of the work that he was doing and the ability that he had. You know, I remember watching film in the playoffs with our team, and Coach Sloan is running the film session, and, you know, we watch, you know, we go position by position our matchups, and you tell what the person does well and what he doesn't do well. And, you know, when you think about Kobe Bryant, all the things he does well, it's a long list of things he does well, and then the list of that he doesn't do well, it's really not even there. And then watching on the film, you know, me playing my best possible defense I possibly can, cutting off his first move, his second move, his third move, his counter, two or three pump fakes, and he gives a shimmy and shoots a fadeaway jump shot contested. And, you know, hearing Coach Sloan saying, hey, that's really good defense. You couldn't have played better defense than that, but better offense and better defense because the offense scored. And, you know, that show speaks of his greatness because a lot of guys are on a lot of clips like that throughout their career, playing great defense, couldn't play better defense, but his offense was just so good that in his will to succeed and will to win, always overpowered and outmatched his opponent and allowed him to be one of the best players that ever played the game of basketball.
You know, you guys on the Jazz those years, you did have some battles, and you guys had the Jazz had a really good team, like a really good team. Play the same position. You're guarding Kobe. He's guarding you, starting against each other. What was that like, kind of getting ready to play against Kobe? And, you know, you kind of mentioned in the moment he's a competitor and he's on the other team. Mm-hmm. But, you know, was he a trash talker? I heard stories, you know, he tries to get in guys' heads and, you know, sometimes just in a playful way. Like, what was that like just kind of like going right at him, you know, for years?
I was lucky to have a guy and a mentor by the name of Derek Fisher, who was one of Kobe's best friends. Yeah. He'd tell me, hey, man, Kobe is so high strung that you don't need to throw any additional fuel on the fire. He's so much of a competitor and his will to win is so high that you don't need to push his buttons and wake him up. So what I did was I just put my head down and I grinded and I played as hard as I possibly could every possession, and I left it on the court. And I didn't have to speak about it because always on time, always on schedule, it never didn't happen. Is every game after, he would always come up and say something either while we're on the court or in the back of the locker rooms about how hard I played, about how I was one of the toughest defenders that he faced, that, you know, I didn't get as much credit as he thought I deserved. And he just wanted to let me know that, you know, keep it up, continue to play hard, that he loves my competitive nature. I never backed down. I looked him in the eye and I competed. He said he loved about me all the time. And, you know, you hear stories all the time about guys feel like they can trash talk him. I just didn't feel the need to. You know, I knew the ability that he had. I knew that he could score at a high level and score first anybody, any defense, no matter what. And he didn't need somebody trash talking to get him going to feel like he needed to play harder or play more aggressive. So I stayed to myself and just competed against him. And, you know, I think that drove him to compete at a higher level because it was strictly basketball, nothing else, no extra incentive, no extra smack talk, just two guys competing their butts off and trying to get their team to win the game.
Those are cool stories, cool memories. I want to go back a little bit to, you know, you were drafted by the Jazz. Obviously, you played for different teams in the NBA. But you were drafted by the Jazz. You had some really great years for the Jazz. So if you can remember, you know, go back to 06, you know, you're a lottery pick. Young Ronnie Brewer out of Arkansas. You got that baby blue suit on. It's draft day. Like, what was that like? You know, had you ever been to Utah? Like, were you excited? Did you know any guys on the team? Like, what was it like back then?
A little story about that. They have all the draft prospects in New York City who got invited to the green room. People are giving you all type of things. Hey, wear this jewelry. Let me cut your hair. You need to wear these kind of shoes, these cufflinks, this watch, this color suit. Well, this particular company made everybody's suits, LV. They made everybody's suit. And I get my suit when we take pictures in it, and I'm looking. I'm like, man, my suit looks like every person in the draft. Literally, my suit looks like every single person in the draft. We're all different. We're all a separate person. We're going to get drafted at whatever number, and that's what we're going to be judged off of. And we're all going to have separate careers. I was like, so I'm not trying to do anything crazy, but I'd rather be different because I am different. I am Ronnie Brewer. I shoot different from a different place than other people, went to a different school. I want to have a different identity. So I ended up having a Carolina blue suit, and I was like, man, nobody's got this color suit. A lot of people have the same style suit because that was the style at that time. But I thought it was pretty cool and kind of like destiny that, you know, I wore that. And then, you know, a couple minutes before I get the news, they tell me, hey, you just got selected by the Utah Jazz. They bring me a hat that matches my suit. They give me the little round ball basketball that also matched my suit. So be cool. When my name was called, I didn't know much about Salt Lake City. I was like, hey, I don't know anybody from there. I've never been there. I don't know any of the players. But I really didn't get to wrap my head around it because everything was going so fast at that moment. But when once it slowed down, you know, I played against Darren Williams the year before and the year before. Played against each other AAU basketball. Paul Millsap and I, where we had met each other because we played against each other in college, and we're similar to the same area, Arkansas, Louisiana is connected. And then, you know, looking at the roster, Carlos Boozer, knew of him, didn't know him personally, but knew of him. Memo Kerr, and I knew him at Detroit, how big of a piece he was for the Detroit Pistons winning a world championship. I knew AK-47 of him. His ability of being a very versatile and big guard that can do a lot of different things. I knew of Matt Harpering just because, and I always used to make fun of because I used to play with him on NBA Jam back in the day. So I knew of Matt Harpering a little bit, and then they traded for Derek Fisher, and, you know, he's an Arkansas guy. So I had a really good relationship with him and, you know, still a long-lasting relationship. I know his mom. His mom is very active in the community in Arkansas and Little Rock in Northwest Arkansas. So I do a lot of work with her. So I knew a couple guys. I knew of CJ Miles. I didn't know him personally just because he got drafted early. So I knew a lot of guys, didn't know anyone personally, but I was super excited when my name was called. And then when I actually got to visit Salt Lake, see the mountains, get to the Energy Solutions Arena at the time, his name of the arena at the time, I meet the staff, then, you know, actually being wanted by those guys meant something. It reminded me a little bit of home, too, because of the support. You know, there's no other big team in town. I mean, you have Utah, you have BYU, you got Weber State, a couple other schools that are college, but there's not really any major professional team. You got the Salt Lake City Bees, minor league baseball, Real Salt Lake soccer team. But other than that, the Utah Jazz is the biggest platform. And, you know, the fan support was great. I think it won us a lot of games each year I was there. And you didn't take it for granted while you played there because you'd go on the road and you'd see fans not showing support, not having sellout arenas. And it was awesome to always be able to call our home court the best advantages in the entire NBA.
You mentioned Jazz fans. Talk a little bit more about Jazz fans for me. Like, do they still see you? Like, when you're traveling or you're, you know, on the road or you're at dinner, like, do Jazz fans still see you? And, like, what's your relationship like with fans from the Jazz?
When I was playing for Utah, it was great. You know, you'd go out to dinner or you'd leave a game and you see numerous, you know, grown-ups, kids with your Jersey on and Memo, AK, Booze, D-Wheel, all those guys made the All-Star team at one point or another. So they for sure were fan favorites. And I think that, you know, Paul and myself worked as hard as we possibly can to have that same feeling from Jazz fans that, you know, we were going to leave it all on the court. We're going to play hard for Coach Sloan, play hard for the fans, and hopefully the fans respected us and they realized that. And to me, I thought, you know, Jazz fans were some of the best fans in the entire NBA.
There's this phrase that we have here. I don't necessarily know if we had it back in the when you were here, but it's once a Jazz man, always a Jazz man. I don't know if you've heard that.
I have not heard that, but that's awesome.
It's a phrase, I think, I want to say maybe about five or six years ago, and I think fans, we really just kind of love, like you mentioned, it's the big thing in town, and fans love the Jazz. Everybody loves the Jazz, and we love the players. It's kind of like an extension of our family in a way. And I think, you know, as taking myself for example, you know, I'm a lifelong Jazz fan, and when I think about Ronnie Brewer and I think about that team, like, I don't think anyone ever has had any kind of negative thought or feeling about you specifically as a Jazz fan. I think people just really loved your game, loved your hustle, loved your attitude. You know, you were an athletic guy, and you could, you know, dunk, and you were exciting to watch, and you played good D. So I think if you were to talk to any Jazz fan today, and, you know, you haven't played for the Jazz for 10 years, I think you still have people who love you. Like, it's got to be kind of a funny thing to think about.
I still get stuff on social media, people still showing love and support, and that just means the world to me, because it shows that, you know, I did the right way, played the right way, left it all on the court, and fans are recognizing that. I think that's what Coach Sloan brought out of all of us, is the way that we're supposed to play, the way we're supposed to our preparation, and it forces us to play at a high level. And I think our fans being there to support, you know, like I said before, made us win a lot more games. And, you know, I'm forever grateful, because the experience I had at Utah is second to none. And I played at a lot of great places in the NBA with a lot of great players. So I really enjoyed it a lot.
You mentioned Coach Sloan. And what was it like playing for Coach Sloan? I would assume, you know, different than other coaches, maybe similar in some ways. But as a player who played for him, what was it like? And how did that, you know, do you see his style in you now that you're a coach? And, you know, talk a bit about Coach Sloan.
Man, Coach Sloan was great. I think that in the moment, like, it's even with Kobe, it's hard to, like, to recognize greatness when you're in the moment. Like, Coach Sloan coached you hard. He expected a lot out of you. He pushed you, made you a tougher player, made you grit and grind the entire way. You know, as a coach now, you know, I see myself implementing a lot of those things. You know, team first, making the extra pass, being selfless, rotating over, giving your body up, making winning plays, taking charges, extra pass, talking, communicating on defense, and playing as hard as you possibly can on both ends of the floor. Every cut hard, every rotation hard, everything is at a winning level. And, you know, we were, you know, a lot of times we were like, man, coach is just on us. We're going as hard as we possibly can. But there's always another level that you can get. You know, he tended to do that. And I think he made really good players out of everybody that he's had the ability to coach over his career.
Do you ever find yourself, like, saying phrases or things that Coach Sloan said?
No, not really. Coach Sloan is super old school, man. So he would say stuff, and he'd be like, what are you talking about, man?
You know, working for the Jazz for so many years, I got a chance to, you know, interact with him a little bit. And, I mean, I wasn't his player, so he didn't have that relationship or that, you know, it's not like he was hard on, you know, employees of the Jazz. He was always just so gracious and so nice. And I think he said a good thing there about, you know, in the moment, it's hard to, you know, recognize, you know, what is there in front of you until maybe it's gone. And yeah, I think Coach Sloan maybe fits that bill of just such a unique guy, such a unique coach. And when you think about, like, the Jazz as an organization, like, in so many ways, it's still you know, Coach Sloan formed it, and it's still that way. It's kind of amazing. As far as like former teammates, do you still keep in touch with guys?
Through social media a lot, social media and on the phone. Like I talk to CJ Miles a lot, social media, sometimes on the phone. Paul Millsap, social media on the phone. Ronnie Price, Darren Williams, Booze, Memo. Every once in a while, AK. Every once in a while, I'll run into Brevin Knight when he was here. Every once in a while, Derek Fisher. And I've even crossed paths with Morris Allman before. And Khalil Fasinko will message me every once in a while on social media and post to Kufi. So, and Wes Matthews. I try to talk to as many people as possible. You know, even Eric Maynor and Sonny Out of Games. There's, you become brothers with a lot of those guys. And the bond is really, really close. And, you know, you tend to try to keep up with how they're doing in life, keep up with their family. And, you know, you wish everybody the best and good health, because you never know how long you're going to be on this earth.
Do you feel like, because as a Jazz fan, I would love for there to be a day. And, you know, obviously, you know, we weren't able to win a title when you were here, but it was such a good team and so many good players. I would love to see a day where the Jazz like honored and brought all of you guys back. Do you think that would be something that you and that team would be like down for, whether it's, you know, in the near future or just in the future sometime?
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it. I think that'd be really cool. I think that's something that that they should do, especially, you know, for Coach Sloan. I think he should get as much recognition as possible. You know, he's just that big of a deal that you should always – try to give, you know, let the guy smell his rose while he's around to smell it. And, you know, he coached so many phenomenal players, you know, the list can go on for forever. And I think it, you know, just bringing his former teams back, I think that'd mean a lot to him and as well as the community.
As a fan, that would be amazing. I would be at that game. I would be whatever events they've got you guys at. That would be really cool. I wanted you to talk about Memo, only because, you know, I have this tradition on this podcast where this is the 13th episode, and I kind of like to tie it into a player's jersey. So, you know, Memo wore number 13, and I have this unique opportunity for one of his teammates, you know, to talk about, you know, him, or I don't know if you have stories or anything. So, just a little bit about Memo, you know, what kind of, you know, guy. I think I know what kind of guy he is. He's just so lovable and just so down to earth and happy. What was it like playing with him, and just, you know, any stories on Memo?
So my best story I had for Memo, Coach Sloan already thinks that rookies shouldn't be able to play and gives the rookies a hard time and makes it, you know, living hell for him because, you know, he wants you to earn your keep. So my locker was right next to Memo at Energy Solutions Arena. And before all the games, we had to bring bagels, donuts, orange juice for the team. And it was the rookie's duty to do so. One day, it was my duty to go get bagels and donuts and orange juice just like that for pregame shoot around. I was assigned to be the rook of Memo Kirk. So, you know, I was kind of hesitant about it because I was like, it's going to be like a language barrier. Like, I don't know if he can speak English or whatnot. And I didn't know too much about him. Met him, could tell he could speak English, cracking jokes a little bit. We hit it off instantly. But we're at this shoot around and I'm about to pull into the parking garage, like the little lower area where you park the loading dock in the back. And I get a text from Memo saying, "Hey, man, if possible, could you get me a coffee, a Turkish Delight, and then a Turkish paper?" And I was like, "Where would you get that?" He goes, "Man, all over. They provide it because they have the Mormon temple downtown, and there's people that fly from all over the world, and so gas stations around that area would have different things like that because so many ethnicities come in and to visit, and there's different multicultural buildings that's down there." So I'm like, okay. So I zoom to the temple, and I pull up on like my navigation about the closest gas stations, and I go to all these gas stations. I'm talking about every gas station that's in 10-minute radius downtown, in the little outskirts. I go to it, asking about the Turkish paper, Turkish July, all this stuff. I'm panicking. So at the same time, I know I have to be on the court at a certain time because rookies had, that's what we had to do. So finally, I was like, man, I can't find this paper, Turkish Delight, coffee. He's just going to have to be mad at me. And so I rushed back to the practice so I get on the court so I can play. And everybody's staring at me when I'm in there because I'm stressed and I'm sweating. And D. Will goes, well, did you get the paper? I was like, dude, no, I didn't get the paper. I didn't get the donuts. I didn't get anything. I was hit and miss on everything. And he's dying laughing. And I was like, that's not funny. Like dude's going to say something. Because basically Matt Harper made a rule that, you know, like you had to do, like the rookies had to do whatever the vet said or that we could get fined. And it was in our rule book that said, you know, if we don't, like comply with what's being told to us in our duties as rookies, that the upper vet has the ability to fine you. So I was like, man, I'm gonna get fined for not signing a paper and all this other stuff. And Memo was acting like he was cussing me out and with his Turkish accent, it's like that. And I was just apologizing. Like, hey, I'm sorry. And then he was like, man, I'm just messing with you. There's no Turkish paper down here. So I'm like, dude, I was looking for all that time, panicking, and there's no such thing. He's like, nah, I don't think they make Turkish papers in Salt Lake. So it was funny after, but I'd panic, and you know, it showed that he jokes around and he has a sense of humor. And you know, from that point on, we had a good relationship. You know, he did so much for the Jazz when I was there, just very like happy to be able to say that I was a teammate of his, and had the success that we had while we were there together.
That is awesome. That is a fantastic story. Thank you for telling that. I was over here laughing to myself, trying not to laugh into the speaker here, but I can just kind of see Memo doing that and like doing his grin, you know, that he does. And oh man, were you in trouble for not getting like donuts and orange juice?
No, I got regular donuts for people. I just didn't find the things that he was asking. I got orange juice and donuts for everybody and bagels, but I didn't know, I couldn't get his request.
That's awesome. I know time's short. I know you got a radio show to do. I was just wondering, you know, when you think about Utah and you think about the Jazz, and like I said, it's been 10 years, but I don't know. Do you feel like it was your best, you know, best time of your career, or like what memories come to your mind when you think about playing for the Jazz?
Man, it's always good memories. Great relationships I built with my teammates. You know, great relationships I built with fans and friends that I've had over years. And you know, I think those the 4 years I was there, we had it really rolling. You know, I averaged, you know, career highs in points, and I felt like I was rebounding a good range, and my assists were pretty good, and steals were always good. And you know, I always say that, you know, a lot of people take for granted like not like playoffs and making it to the playoffs and making it to the conference finals. Like that's something that's supposed to happen every single time. And you're supposed to have that because you built a good program. But if you look at certain teams and certain players, you know, they'll tell you that it's not guaranteed and it's not promised every day. So I think it's one of the best things that I had is be able to go and you know, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the fans, enjoyed the success. And it's been one of the favorite places I've visited on my journeyman's path while I was in the NBA.
Well, Ronnie, from all Jazz fans, I think I can speak for all of us. I just want to say, you know, thank you. Thanks for your time. not only on this podcast, but thanks for the time while you were here playing. It was fun watching you. It's fun, like, kind of catching up with you a little bit. And I hope in the future there's some time where, you know, Jazz fans get to kind of appreciate and show their appreciation to you in some way. I think that would be really cool, whether it was, you know, honoring the team or having you back. I know the Jazz do that from time to time, having former players back. And I know you're a busy man, so maybe the schedules wouldn't line up. But any parting words for any Jazz fans or anything you'd want to say to Jazz fans?
Man, I just, you know, I appreciate the support. I appreciate the continued support for the Jazz organization. I'm actually really good friends with Mike Conley Jr. A lot of people really know that. He's from Fayetteville, Arkansas, born and raised, grew up here. And, you know, he then moved to Indianapolis, where he ended up going to high school, middle school and high school. But he's still a Fayetteville guy, and I want y'all to support him the best way y'all possibly can. And you know, welcome with open arms, because he's a phenomenal talent, phenomenal kid, phenomenal character. And, you know, to me, he's like family.
Awesome. Well, Ronnie, thanks again. Thanks to everybody for listening to Jazzed. This has been a fun episode, a unique episode for us, but it's been really, really great catching up with you. So good luck with everything. And yeah, just kind of good luck with life and, you know, being a coach. And I think we're all still following you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.